We've got hay fever today in the form of a Noel Coward play by Humboldt State University's Theater, Film, and Dance Department. The play opens this Friday night, April 27th at 7:30 p.m. in HSU's Gist Hall Theater. Here in the studio are two of the play's actors, both HSU juniors, William English and Sean Wagner. And I've got director Jim McHugh, a longtime HSU theater, film, and dance professor who is retiring this year. We begin with first Jim and then Sean's response to my question about Noel Coward's choice to name the central family in this play the Bliss family.
I think of it as the Blitzkrieg.
We think that we are quite blissful. We're a great family who have lots of fun. It's just that others don't really think of it as that.
They might think of it as torturous.
But yeah, but we think it's fun.
So tell me, Sean, what is the character you are portraying?
I play Sorrel Bliss. She is the daughter in the family. She is a feminist intellectual who views herself as more than compared to other people in the family, that I'm trying to be a better person, but has a habit of falling into the same manners as the rest of the family.
Meaning tantrums?
Yes, lots of tantrums when she does not get her way.
Fits of sobbing into pillows?
Yep, screaming into pillows, stomping.
Was that a direction, Jim, that you gave? We have to have the pillows and the stomping?
Actually, yes.
Good. Oh, my God, that must help so much. Like, let's say you come to rehearsal and you're feeling frustrated about something going on in here at school. You just take that pillow.
I think of finals, and I think I'm just all the things that happen during the day that you're not allowed to scream and yell and stomp around. And I'm like, yeah, I get to do that for an hour and a half. And it's totally fine, and no one thinks I'm crazy.
Is any of your emotion directed toward your fellow actor, who is William? William, who are you playing?
I'm playing Richard, a diplomatist.
Richard, diplomatist.
The diplomatist.
The diplomatist. Is that...
not his official title, but his occupation.
Is that having a diploma or creating diplomas?
It's an old term for being a diplomat.
Okay.
Yes.
I like the other one. So it's your term for yourself. Your character's term for yourself?
No, it's the playwright's term for someone who works at the diplomatic office in London at that particular period.
And as such, his opinions of the Bliss family is neutral because he must remain so.
Naturalistic dialogue. The way this is described and the information I received, relying on interaction between performers rather than, I guess, heavy thoughts, sort of like what you'd hear people say every day conversationally, as opposed to trying to make an important point.
Yes. A lot of it is about the sparking of wits, the matching of people. Like, one of my overarching metaphors for this is a tennis game. And Richard has a scene of tennis with one of the other characters. And I found myself last night sitting there with my head going side to side to side to side as the two of them are carrying on a conversation isolated from one another.
Now, this is not Richard and Sorrel.
No,
Richard and somebody else.
Somebody else.
Do Richard and Sorrel speak?
Yes, I invite him down for the weekend because we met at a dance. And so he's my date.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Is there any short scene that the two of you can do?
Yes.
Yeah. We can go after Jackie's left.
Because I want to hear some of this, a little bit of this dialogue.
Right. Start from poor girl's half-witted.
Sure.
All right. Poor girl's half-witted.
Oh, she's shy, I think.
I hope father will find her comfort.
Tell me one thing, Sorrel. Did your father and mother know I was coming?
Oh, yes, they were awfully pleased.
A rather nice-looking woman came down in a big hat and went out into the garden with a young man without saying a word.
That was mother, I expect. We're an independent family. We entertain our friends sort of separately.
Oh, I see.
It was sweet of you to come.
I've wanted to come. thought about you a lot.
Have you really? That's thrilling.
I mean it. You're so alive and vital and different from other people.
I'm so terribly afraid that you'll be bored here.
Why should I be?
I don't know, but you won't be, will you? And if you are, tell me at once and we'll do something quite different.
You're rather dear, you know.
I'm not. I am devastating. Entirely lacking in restraint. So, Simon, it's father's and mother's fault, really. You see, they're so vague. They've spent their lives cultivating their arts and not devoting any time to ordinary conventions and manners and things. And I'm the only one who sees that, so I'm trying to be better. I wish I could be beautifully poised and carry off difficult situations with a lift of the eyebrows.
I'm sure you could carry off anything.
See, there you are, saying the right thing. You always say the right thing and no one knows a bit what you're really thinking. That's what I adore.
I'm afraid of saying anything now in case you think I'm only being correct.
But you are correct. I wish you'd teach Simon to be correct, too.
It would be uphill work, I'm afraid.
Why, don't you like him?
No, I've only met him for a moment.
Would you like to see the garden?
Oh, very much indeed.
Oh, as a matter of fact, we'd probably wait till after tea. Shall I sing you something?
Oh, please, I should love it.
I don't want to, really a bit. I'm just trying to entertain you. It's as easy as pie to talk in other people's houses, like at the dance the other night, but here on my own ground, I am finding it difficult.
I'm sorry.
No, it isn't your fault. Honestly, you are awfully kind and responsive. What shall we do?
I'm quite happy talking to you.
Can you play Mahjong?
No, I'm afraid I can't.
I am so glad I do hate it so. So that's a little bit of that.
Oh, yes, it's in received British dialect.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Did you say received?
Mm-hmm. Received, yes.
What does that mean, received British dialect?
It's a form of speech for the stage that would imitate British dialect. And we're in a period of what was actually transatlantic speech in the 1920s when the Yankees had just left World War I, and they'd left some of their speech patterns there and brought a bunch back. So when you think of Cary Grant or Katharine Hepburn, that would be the transatlantic dialect. And this is written in the same period. So I've asked them to watch Bringing Up Baby.
Mm-hmm. Have you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. William?
William. Okay, I'm going to assume that's a negative.
You know, it's interesting in the way you're speaking. It does remind, because my next question is about your perception of Noel Coward's intentions here, because it is like purposely overacting or purposely over emoting.
There are moments in this play when there is just absolutely simple, honest dialogue, which is really lovely. But because the Bliss family, dad's a writer, mom is a retired, not for long, actress, and they tend to get carried away, and they actually enact plays in the living room. The plays that mom was in are part of their life. So we find ourselves with three styles of acting. One is that normal kind of conversation. Two is acting like you might in a play with Cary Grant. And three, all the way back to the time of soundstage, no talkies, sort of overrated gestures. So all three of those styles are a part of Noel Coward's work.
Three complementary acting styles, and I think that you've just explained it to a certain extent. Screwball comedy, silent screen acting, and simple, natural family conversations, all rolled into
all
one.
All rolled into one big comedy. And to watch the shift from one to another, the cues the family gives one another. They go from a moment of, I think, rational to moments of completely irrational. And the cues are fun, just fun for them.
And quick, I would think, especially when you're referring to one in exchange, like a tennis match. I'm thinking back and forth, back
they
and forth,
they are quick.
Back and forth.
They're very bright, very intellectual people. Noel Coward defined the nature of wit in the 1920s, He actually wrote this play after he had come from the West End in London to New York to try and sell some of his early plays to Broadway producers. And he went to a party out on Long Island with an actress and her husband. Oh, her husband was a writer. And that's what the play is about. And in this play now, he is actually telling us the story of the time he was on Long Island with these people. So there's a bit of truth in this.
Now, would you say that your perceptions are valuable too, Sean and William, on this question? Would you say Noel Coward is making fun of a certain behavioral style, accepted convention of behavior, making fun of human, I don't know, of romance, of human interaction, of the English? What are some of your thoughts, all of you?
I would like to say that his interpretation of what he saw that night in this party is very much reflected in this play, because as a whole, I think Western ideals are just sort of odd. I mean, people get so uncomfortable or fanatic about the most trivial things, in my opinion, compared to other countries where you can go to. You know, for example, a big idea is this matter of age difference in relationships, or sort of this open relationship, what is okay, what is not okay. And it's hinted upon and brought into question of, okay, well, what do you think about this? Because here's this absurd moment because of these people that think that this is or is not okay. It's pretty interesting.
One young man that his mother has invited to the party, mm-hmm. comes to the party, and the young man is college-aged, and she is a retired actress. And so he comes up for the weekend, and we see them enjoying one another's company. And then a little while later, there is a shift, and the young man is now with somebody, let's say Sorrel's age.
Yeah, just about my age.
As opposed to an older woman.
As opposed to someone his own age, yeah. So there is, right after the war, the sense of the flappers, as you had said, Sorrel, the feminist revolution, mm-hmm. and also the breaking of the ideals of the Victorian period of one man, one woman in a box, period, for the rest of their lives, and of the same social class. Now, all of these people are of the same social class. But there is a polyamorous adventuresomeness to this period.
Jim McHugh, who is directing Hay Fever, which opens Friday night in Gist Hall Theater here on campus. Also here are actors William English and Sean Wagner. I'm Wendy Butler, and you're listening to Art Waves on KHSU. This play was first produced in 1925, right? And would you say, in your study of Noel Coward, would you say that this was well-received when it was first produced in 1925?
Extraordinarily well-received, yes. Well, it tickled because it was the mood of the period. It reflected both the transatlantic nature of England and America, the rejoining of, you know, the mother country and the children and the victoriousness of war, and his incredible lacing wit. Right, everybody enjoyed that.
William and Sean, is this your first foray into Noel Coward, or have you done other works?
This is my first Noel Coward show, but I've done other plays in this similar period. So, like, I was Tracy Lord in A Philadelphia Story, which is Katharine Hepburn, and it's in more 30s. But it's a similar style of acting. So it wasn't too off for me to just kind of, like, jump in to go, oh, I know this type of world. But with Noel Coward stuff, it's even farther extended because there's so many different styles of acting in one play that if you're not fully emerged and listening and responding, you'll be left behind as an actor, because you can't just, like, you can't phone it in. You have to be alert and ready the entire time, because you never know what Jim is going to throw at you and be like, a big thing we were working on is when I throw temper tantrums, I have to speak at the pace of my feet. So my feet and voice are synced.
I can visualize it happening.
It was something that Jim was like, hey, let's just try it. And it turned out to be hysterical. So now I have to focus on, okay, how fast are my feet going? And kind of treating monologues as music. That's right. All right, now I'm going to speed up here and then I'm going to slow down. And because my training is in film acting. So like I'm very much into Meisner, very simple, naturalistic. And then we come into this show. That's like, you get like a little bit of that, but I have to be just over the top, but still real and honest and be an actual person in these extraordinary circumstances. So it's been fun.
What are some of your thoughts, William?
This is my first experience with this type of work. The closest things I've done to this fashion would just be some sort of whimsical musical. But it has nothing. There's no comparison there. No, but it's a lot of fun. It's been a process. And I'm going to be very happy with what I can take away from this production to any future show. There's just so many little nuances that you really get to play with and make these bits with these other actors on stage. And it's a lot of fun.
You say make these bits or bets?
Bits.
Okay.
We do make bets on who will fall down the stairs, but that is separate.
We did have a bet on who would break during our warm-ups doing Noel Coward's poems and songs and who could make other people laugh. So that was, I think we all lost because none of us could keep a straight face.
We've chosen a number of Noel Coward's songs to be played. It's a three-act play, so there's a chance for three bits of songs, and it's all Noel Coward music that we're using, and a lot of it is him singing his own works.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Nobody does it better.
Jim, did you bring this play to, you wanted to do this play?
Very much.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was your idea to get it done.
Third year, I'd proposed it to the faculty.
The third year you
third
had proposed?
Third year, yeah. Yeah. They decided to wait until this year.
This year being your final year.
This year being my swan song. And this being my swan song production.
And how many years have you been at Humboldt State University?
26 or 7, somewhere in that neighborhood. I've sort of lost count. It's a lovely place. Somebody asked me if I was going to stay here after I retired, and I said, I live in Eureka, and the answer is yes. I've just fallen in love with up here, very much so. I'm from New York City, and this was a big step for me when I came out here in 91 to leave New York.
And you came out here specifically to work in the theater department here?
They had offered me a job. So I came out here to work in the theater department. That was when we had the MFA program, et cetera, and I wanted to work with a small number of graduate students who had the similar passions to myself.
And your passions, well, your expertise is in lighting, design.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. But you've been not only working on our theater productions at Humboldt State University for all of these years, but you also teach in the classroom here.
I teach in the classroom here, and I go away in the summers, and I have been working for repertory theaters. There's an opera company that I've been working for in Virginia for the last 5 or 6 years, and I get to do an opera and a musical every summer. It's really nice to get out of here and do that and then come and bring that sort of refreshing perspective back.
One of the courses, I don't know if you're still teaching it, but it is titled Visual Aesthetics.
That has fallen out of the catalog, I'm sorry to say.
What was that?
Beautiful class.
Wonderful class.
Did you both take that?
Yes.
Well, please tell what you did in this class.
We had to look at art and theater and film in a new lens and look at it purely from an aesthetic point of view. So what colors, shapes, lighting, overall mood that a production can bring without even using words. So you watch a clip of something and the intellectual mood, the emotional mood, and figure out for ourselves as artists what aesthetics appeal to us and what kind of art we want to make in theater and film. And I loved it. So it referenced art history a lot, and we had to do our own little, like, we had, like, there was one we had to make a collage based off of a story we read. And we weren't allowed to, like, explain it to people. They just had to look at it and make meaning of it. And we wrote a paper, and hopefully what we wrote would match what people saw. But it really broke down the walls of how we feel we're supposed to watch art.
I found it to be one of the most complex and, in a way, difficult classes, because we are so programmed at this day and age to not be creative and to keep those away. You know, learn through the textbook, don't think, just do. And we really had to look inside of what we were feeling and how to express that in a multitude of ways. So it was really amazing when, for example, one assignment was to create a production, not actually do it, but we take a story, you design the lighting, you design the costumes, design the set, and we had to think about every little detail that would be going in there, and it just, once you started, you couldn't stop, and that was invigorating. So, lovely.
Yeah, there you go.
It's what we do. Thank you. That was sweet.
I'd like you to share, Jim, because you have done this for so... Well, first of all, let me back up.
I don't like so long so much.
Have you also performed on stage?
Yes.
Yeah. But you prefer to be the one brewing it behind
I've learned
scenes?
How to brew, yes. Yeah. I actually began as an actor, went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and did some work as an actor in New York. And what I discovered very quickly, one summer I went to a place and they didn't have a designer show up. And it paid more. And so I sort of got into the brewing business, as you have so nicely put it. Yeah. And I have stirred the pot for years now. And it gets more and more complicated and much more fun. The longer you do it, the more you see, the more details show up. And it's really rather awesome. I feel sorry for Derek Lane. Derek Lane is lighting this piece. And when I was sitting at home looking at the piece on paper and planning it out, I was writing movement as lighting cues. And so I feel very sorry for Derek.
The role of lighting, given that it has been your main focus all of these years, why is lighting so important?
If an actor is a fish, light is the air on which, current on which they flow and breathe and move and glow.
Enough said.
We would literally be in the dark. Ba-dum-bum.
Okay, theater then. You said that when you first came on, Humboldt State University was a certain, there was a certain type of culture here.
Well, yeah,
and it's changed, developed so much over the years. And what do you mean by that?
There were 26 people sitting around the faculty table in the theater, film, and dance department when I got here. No longer. You can drop the two. There was a graduate program. We had about 36 graduate students here and 100 undergraduates, and that faculty was able to keep them working. The production work here was monumental. You remember six productions, eight productions a year out of the department, and that has all sort of come down. And the student body has changed a lot. The needs of the students in California have changed.
What do you mean?
We're seeing a lot of first generation at college students here now, which we had not seen before. And that requires, they have a different need, and their needs are really, really important. And so we're now addressing that, I think, rather than other needs. And it's quite lovely. It's quite lovely. Yeah.
Theater's going to continue in your life? Yes? But you're not sure how, or you speak, not me.
It has to, because it's all I've ever done. Well, no, it's not theater. Yes, in some form or other, it's all I've ever done. And so it will have to continue somehow. I'm probably going to spend a lot of time in Mexico. And community theater down there is fascinating. Just fascinating. I have a lot to learn to communicate down there. But I also will be going back to the East Coast and doing commercial design work. Yeah.
Finally, theater... Why is it so important, not only to you, but to all of us?
It's all of life. It explains every culture. I mean, every time I have to do a new play, I had to go back and I now know what Flapper's fingernail polish looked like. I know what music they listened to. I know what books they were reading. So as you open up all of these cultures in every single play, the world and people open up to you, and it becomes rather magnificent. The spectrum of people, yeah.
Beautiful sentiment about live theater from HSU, retiring theater, film, and dance professor Jim McHugh, who directs Noel Coward's Hay Fever on stage in HSU's Gist Hall Theater this Friday and Saturday night, and next Friday and Saturday, May 4th and 5th. Showtimes are at 7:30 p.m. And there are two Sunday matinees scheduled for this Sunday, April 29th, and next Sunday, May 6th, at 2 p.m. This play contains mature content, although no profanity. For tickets, phone 707-826-3928 or visit centerarts.humboldt.edu. That's it for today's program. Please join me again Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. And you can also listen to Art Waves anytime online at khsu.org. And Art Waves podcasts are available for download from iTunes. Until next time, I'm Wendy Butler. Thank you for listening.